Welcome to Lyric Fest Podcast. Joining us from Paris is soprano Amy Burton. With a voice the New York Times has called luminous and lustrous, Amy has sung with the Metropolitan Opera, New York City Opera at the White House, and with major opera companies and orchestras throughout the U.S., Europe, U.K., Japan, and Israel, as well as on recital and cabaret stages from New York to Barcelona. She's premiered pieces by major contemporary composers, and her recordings are widely available on multiple labels. A sought-after teacher, Amy is professor of voice at several major music schools and conservatories and maintains a private voice studio in New York City. She's also in demand for masterclasses and residencies throughout the United States. Amy has won many awards, including from New York City Opera, where she was a soprano for 12 seasons, and was silver medalist in the 1995 Marian Anderson International Vocal Competition. Amy will be singing in the latest in Lyric Fest's biography and music series on February 10th and 11th, featuring the fascinating life and times and sublime songs of Claude Debussy, among the greatest song composers. Amy, good to have you with us today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
What first drew you to Debussy's music?
Well, going to conservatory, you hear it all the time. I loved the whole tone scales. The tonalities really drew me in, even as a teenager, more than Mozart or more classical composers. But as I grew into the singer's life, I was really drawn into the poetry. He's a composer who I think wanted to be a poet, wanted to be a painter, and just did a deep dive at a certain point into this simplest poetry that he loved so much. I was also very drawn to the poetry that he wrote himself, as you'll see in some of these songs that will be on the concert.
And you mentioned the singer's life. Tell us about Debussy's early connection with singers.
Well, Debussy played voice lessons. He played for I'm trying to remember her name. Of course, I'm feeling pressured right now, but I believe it was Verlaine's mother-in-law. So he already had this connection with singers as well as this connection with Verlaine. And of course, the famous Madame Vanier, for whom he wrote so many high-lying pieces, and the first volumes of his songs that were released were what they called the Recueil Vanier, you know, the songs that were for her, some of the most, you know, the very famous ones, like the what's now called the Quatre Chansons de Jeunesse, which actually Debussy never grouped them that way, but they're probably four of the most performed Debussy songs. So he just kind of immersed himself in the world of singers. You'll find a lot of conductors and composers spent time around singers, really learning their voices, playing for voice lessons. It may seem like something that you do as a student, but in fact, it's a way of getting to really understand the instrument, the voice as an instrument. And so Debussy was definitely in that world of the voice early on.
And aside from his love affairs with singers and singing teachers, he really learned the voice as an instrument itself, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I think you have to be around singers learning to sing to understand just how it works, much as you can look inside the piano and see how the hammers hit the strings and the soundboard, and you can feel the vibrations. But singing is so mysterious. It's an instrument that you can't see, and it's mysterious mostly to singers themselves. They can't see their instrument in action, really. But if you are around singers and learning about using the breath and about vibrations and articulation, you have some idea how the instrument works. And Debussy most definitely was in touch with that early on.
And you'll be opening the Lyric Fest concert with Voici que le Printemps. here comes the spring, as we currently confront snow and sub-freezing temperatures in Philadelphia. What's your response to the poetry within this song?
I absolutely adore this song. I adore the poetry. One of the qualities of the poetry that Debussy loved, this particular one, I don't know if you wouldn't really call it symbolist, but it had something in common, which was music that was already in the poetry, the choice of sonorities. You'll see it, I think, illustrated most clearly in the Arc de Brie of Verlaine, but here too, the poet describes spring like this young prince who's coming back from a long trip away, and as he prances and leaps through the woods, flowers bloom and bushes turn green again, and he's sort of a madman running through the woods. But he also has two birds on one bird on each shoulder, and on one shoulder is a nightingale, and on the other one is a crow or raven. And so the nightingale sings beautifully, but the crow kind of hisses and whistles. And so the nightingale sings for lovers, and the crow hisses and sort of mocks all the people that are not in love in the spring. They're alone in the spring. You know how terrible it is to be without, you see happy couples in the spring. And so in the poetry itself, there is hissing. And he describes the crow, le merle siffle ceux qui ne sont pas aimés. He actually puts the whistling and the mocking in the sounds themselves of the words. So it was a step beyond what we would call automatopoeia.
And you'll also be singing three of Debussy's Arrière d'oublier forgotten songs on this concert. Which are they, and what do you aim to convey through them?
The three that I'll be singing are, I'm trying to remember the order that I'm doing them in. I think the first one is Green. Then the second one is
Il pleut dans mon cœur.
là, thank you. Il pleut dans mon cœur, comme il pleut sur la ville, which actually I think tomorrow it's supposed to rain here in Paris, so I'm going to be thinking about that song a lot. And the last one will be Chevaux de Bois. So they're not grouped in the same order they are in the full piece, but I thought this made a nice group. Chevaux de Bois is so energetic and kind of raucous. I thought that had to be the last one in that group. And Green is a perfect beginning again, a little bit like Voici que le printemps, because it's just filled with the joys of spring well, actually, it's more like summer, I guess. It's the bounty of the fruit and the growing out of the flowers and offering one's heart. It's just filled with this sort of overflowing of love and good feeling and adoration. So we put green first. That's my little mini group.
And you've studied Il pleut dans mon cœur, It Rains in My Heart, for years, but this concert will be the first time you've performed it. Verlaine's poetry here is just fascinating. Describe it for us and how rain is conveyed so tangibly.
Verlaine's brilliance, of course, is matched by Debussy's brilliance. The way Verlaine creates the sound of rain in the poem, I'll set the scene briefly. The poet is, it starts with a quotation at the top of the page. It's not printed in all the squares, but there it is at the top, and it says, Il pleut doucement sur la ville, signed by Arthur Rimbaud. And of course, as you listeners may or may not know, Verlaine and Rimbaud had a tempestuous love affair, Verlaine leaving his wife and child for Rimbaud, and it ended very, very badly. So he starts this poem with a quotation, which I imagine is from a letter from Rimbaud, that it is raining lightly on the town. So that is not Verlaine, but he's inspired by this line, and he writes this poem filled with so much wordplay and sound play. And he plays on the pleur, which means weep, and pleu, which means rain. So it is weeping in my heart as it is raining on the town. He continues throughout the poem to use these sounds that really sound like rain to me. Pleu, 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 and ke, 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 ke. And it really sounds like rain on the roof. So this continues, and of course Debussy chooses to accompany this with this kind of oscillating figure in the piano, da 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 da, with the da di da di da da da. So you really can almost feel the water running down the windows. You can hear the pitter patter on the roof, and you just feel these waves of sheets of rain going by. So between these two geniuses, you have this sense of being trapped, a little bit claustrophobic in this dark space. And of course, Verlaine is very depressed, and in the poem he, everything comes to a stop suddenly. And Debussy does this with him, where he suddenly realizes, why am I depressed? There's no reason. And it's almost like a recitative, the way Debussy sets that. Then it starts up again, and he realizes that it's even more depressing to be depressed and not know why. It winds up being this kind of circular, obsessive thinking. But I feel that Debussy's rain really came right out of Verlaine's rain in the poetry.
And talking about such images and such wide range of human emotions through music, shifting gears just a bit, what was Wagner's influence on Debussy?
Well, I think Debussy was really fascinated by Wagner and the sense of this Wagner's idea of the Gesamtkunstwerk, that, you know, you would have total unity in this work. So Wagner was writing his own text, and then setting them to music, and also envisioning this scenery and all of that, and how the piece would be executed. So Debussy was certainly, you know, loved poetry and tried, you know, his hand at it himself. So in the Prose Lyrique, which are four songs to poetry by Debussy, and also in his very last song, Noël des enfants qui n'ont plus de maison, that was also his text. He was trying to actually do something very similar to what Verlaine was doing, trying to really tailor his text to the song that he wanted to write, and vice versa. In the first Prose Lyrique, the first one, which is Rêve, which means of dreams, he actually uses a kind of a horn call, a French horn call that sounds very Wagnerian. And it's all about kind of looking back at the grand old days of, you know, when knights saved damsels in distress. And there's really this very, very Wagnerian kind of French horn call in the piano. We're not doing that song. I am doing one of the Prose Lyrique, which is the last one, De Soir, where I feel that Debussy has really created something very similar to Chevaux de Bois, the Verlaine, but he's in control of all the elements, as was Wagner.
And as you mentioned, you'll be singing De Soir at night, the last of Debussy's set of Prose Lyrique. Here's how you've described it. This look at modern and mechanistic life and the poet-composer's nostalgic retreat into the simpler past seems quite fitting to me as someone raised in an era before computers and cell phones, when privacy still existed and solitude was still possible. It's quite something, isn't it, Amy, to recognize that past era when today we can hardly imagine life without cell phones?
Well, yes. I mean, I the idea of just going out, just leaving your house without being connected seems a radical idea. But you know, since I became an adult, I've seen the world undergo this tremendous change. I have a almost 24-year-old son, and he has never known a time without this technology. So I just suddenly began to think about this and think about Debussy in 1918, or 1915, I guess, since last song, in World War One, and people were able to shoot missiles and hit a target, 50 miles away. This is all so far from hand-to-hand combat or the whole. I mean, even the Eiffel Tower, which was rather new, I think, when he wrote Dessoir, I think it was around the same time. It was like this colossus in the middle of Paris. People were very upset by it. The scale of it was no longer human. And I think Debussy was really just felt like a stranger in this new world of the industrial age. Trains going so fast, and there's a train in Dessoir. And it's fascinating. He starts the song with this kind of church bell motif. Da 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 dee da 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 da. These kind of easy church bells ringing, pealing, and it's Sunday. And then that same music that was the church bells is played faster and becomes the sound of a train. Yep, ba bum ba ba bum ba ba. And you can hear the wheels kind of going ch and people are dashing out to the suburbs, and everyone is frenetic. And Sunday used to be this day of rest and contemplation, and now it's a day for people to madly go out to the suburbs or visit family. And everything is faster paced and mechanistic. He talks about being on the railroads and seeing these signals that look like faces, like mechanistic faces, like automatons, and you just feel him looking at the world with just horror and wonder, and it just a lack of recognition of what this is, that sort of a loss of a kind of humanity. And then the song kind of melts halfway through. And again, I'm speaking about the song and the poem because Debussy controlled all of it, having written all of it. The song kind of melts into a nostalgic memory of his childhood, and we lose all the mechanical elements. And he's lost in this memory, and talks about the stars, and he talks about, the Virgin Mary and the memories of being in his bed as a child, and then the last thing you hear in the song are these church bells sort of slowing down and fading away. And I've often wondered what would have happened had he lived, further into the 20th century, like Ravel lived into the 1930s, and how strange that seems in comparison. But yeah, I think he really wouldn't have dealt with it very well.
And it's such an ambitious song, creating a really distinct atmosphere. And another one that calls to mind a really strong atmosphere is Debussy's last song, which in fact is the last song in this Lyric Fest concert that you'll be singing, which is Noël des Enfants qui n'ont plus de maison, Christmas Carol for Homeless Children, which was written in the midst of Debussy's illness and his horror at World War I, and also to his own text. This song has so much in it, doesn't it?
It really does. It's a brutal text, and there are her childlike trope in both, again, both in the poetry and in music. She was writing both of them simultaneously. But it sort of reminds me of these children that get pulled into being warlords, that they're sort of, in a way, they're still children, but they've lost any sense of innocence. And so what they've seen, these little children, they've seen their school burned down, they've seen their church burned down, they've seen their teacher burned down, they've seen le pauvre qui ne pas pu s'en aller, the poor old man who couldn't get away. They've seen the horrors of war, and so they've lost their innocence, but they're still children. So he has things that, like, they're asking Christmas to please don't go to the enemy, don't bring joy to the enemy. But they say it like, n'allez pas chez eux, almost like a sullen child would say. But the content is very adult in a way. And then they ask for Christmas. They say that we don't want any toys. We don't want any toys. We just want to have our daily bread. We just want to eat. We want sleep. We want homes. And then we want revenge. They want vengeance. They want to avenge. They want Christmas to avenge France. So it's angry. It's outraged. It's heartbreaking. And yet, it's not sentimental at all, which I find fascinating. Which actually, I think the French character is not generally very sentimental. But in this case, I think the song has that effect on people, but I don't think it in itself is very sentimental. So my hope is to just present it as a kind of just a picture of these sort of, I don't know, I'm not finding the right words. It's kind of a brutal portrait that shouldn't flinch from the truth.
Such a troubling song, and I'm sure that you'll convey it palpably in the concert. The concerts take place on Saturday afternoon, February 10th at 4 o'clock at the Presbyterian Church of Chestnut Hill, and on Sunday afternoon, February 11th at 3 at the Academy of Vocal Arts in Philadelphia. Thanks again for joining us, Amy, and for sharing your thoughts about this ever intriguing music.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.